Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. Today, we have two guests on, Benedict Dyke and Jane Portman. Benedict, how bad did I do on your name there? Was that close?
Yeah, it was close enough. As I said before, it's like, I don't really care.
Awesome. So this is the team behind userlist.io. Do you guys want to talk about like kind of who you are a little bit and what UserList is and before we kind of dive into things?
So userlist.io is a customer messaging tool that's built specifically for SaaS. And we're pretty young, but we've been doing this for a couple years by now, I think a year and a half. And it helps you send onboarding emails and down the road in-app messages to your customers of your SaaS product. And our take on this is to build a simple, focused tool for people just like ourselves.
Yep. Gotcha. So we've been using UserList at SalesCamp for a while now. And so I have some kind of inside knowledge of kind of what it does and stuff. But want to dig into both kind of why you decided to build this and the pain you saw, because I think that's really important. Like, I think we're seeing these days more and more difficulty with people defining and executing on like a particular niche and like pain point that people are having. So I think that's important of like how and why you decided to focus on this. But maybe before, I think it would be cool to talk about generally with like onboarding and SaaS, and that not you're not specifically going to be limited to email in the future, kind of talking through like some things that you guys really like to see as consumers and like now authorities on the topic of like SaaS onboarding, things you really like to see, kind of like a framework maybe, and things that you definitely don't like to see when either you're a consumer of SaaS or like what you're kind of proposing to your customers now.
Yeah, there's so many facets to this problem. Nobody really cares what we want to see as soon as it matters well for their customers, really. But yeah, there are so many great practices there and bad practices as well. Benedict, do you want to take the plunge?
Yeah, sure. I think there are two extremes usually, especially with people we talk to when they sign up to our apps. That's, it's either people send no emails at all, like no onboarding whatsoever, or some just send way too much. And I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, like send some meaningful emails, but not like bombard people with a lot of emails that are not really helping them. So what we usually recommend is that you first go into like your app and figure out like, what's the ideal path to your through your application, like to get people to some meaningful outcome, like get some basically get them to experience some value, and then try to support that journey with some emails while usually skipping those that are irrelevant. Like for example, when someone signs up for your app and figures out the onboarding or like all of your application within the first 5 minutes, there's no need in sending them a lot of emails over the next couple of days explaining all the features they are already using.
So you guys are talking and kind of proposing event-based email onboarding as opposed to drip, like schedule-based emails, which like we send with Castus now, although we're revising this now to be a little more event-driven. But so that's what you're kind of proposing, is to say don't send the same emails to everybody. Send emails just to people based on what they're doing or not doing in the app to get them onboarded better. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. From a user experience perspective, Jane, I know this is kind of like your wheelhouse. How do you like to think about balancing the like people getting emails and taking them out of the app versus things that you're doing in the app to make them more successful more easily?
Yeah, you should probably leverage all types of media, but One philosophy I totally agree upon, and there is the big onboarding guru, Samuel Hulick, who's written a lot on the topic, and I kind of share his philosophy that the original flow of the user appearing in your app for the first time, it should be really uninterrupted. So even if you have in-apps at your disposal, because you're using, I don't know, Intercom or user list, don't just interrupt their journey with your, like, hey there, what's up? I'm Jane. and things like that. Let them figure things out on their own, and then you can use additional channels to either help them or bring them back. But in-apps are not silver bullets, and email is not a silver bullet, but email is more has more longevity because it lives in your inbox and it's more informational, while in-apps can provide some contextual help. But don't count on any of these as, you know, as a replacement for a clear first-run experience.
So I haven't really thought of like the time aspect of in-app messaging versus email. Like in-app messaging is really transient, like a Slack message or Twitter or something like that, or it just kind of goes away, whereas email is always there. It's permanent. Does that affect the type of information that, I say you, but you or we or anybody should think about sending in those two media?
Well, of course. In-app messages are more like beacons, little things that you can point people to other places, while email can have information is in their own, so be a resource on their own. There is a big debate whether you should really be including like full text information inside emails or pointing people elsewhere. But with in-app messages, it's pretty obvious that you have to point people somewhere if you want them to take action.
Interesting. Okay. So Benedict, you were talking before about, you know, don't send the unnecessary emails, only send the emails that will help people along. Say somebody gets into my app and I have pretty much all event-based email triggers. Could I only send them one email for them to get properly onboarded if I have like the flow in the app done correctly? Or do you think even if somebody is successful like you want them to be, do you still want to send them some emails over the course of like a trial period or over the course of a trial period, I guess.
Yeah. So I think it makes sense to send some emails, but like, just be careful about not sending stuff they don't need anymore. And what we usually do and what we recommend is like mapping out an entire like timed sequence that basically assumes the user just has fallen off the onboarding flow and is basically, I don't know, preoccupied with other stuff and got stuck somewhere and then they didn't check back. Basically you think about it like that, like try to get them back into your application and over whatever struggles they're having. And then basically use either events that you send or properties on the user to dynamically skip messages that are not relevant anymore. Like this first bump you usually experience, people usually experience inside your application, make sure you can track if they manage to get through that and then just skip that part of your onboarding flow that would help them with that.
So I know I follow what Brennan Dunn is doing a lot now with Write Message. And I know he had this thing last week that was like, tags are stupid. Don't ever use tags in your email automation. And for me, I'm like, oh, we only use tags. We don't use custom events. Our custom events trigger tags, basically. Can you guys explain why this is, if folks haven't heard kind of what Brennan is preaching these days?
Can I just make a small comment and pass it to Brennan? So Brennan has been on this tags train for years. He's been like a tags wizard of automation. And it's really great to see him jump off that train and onto smarter structured data. And now I'm passing the flag to Benedict because he has so much to say about that.
Yeah, I have opinions on that as well. Tags are stupid, basically. And that's because, like, for one, they are just values, like, I don't know, just a name on a user. Like, it's just a label you put on there. It doesn't have any timing information. You have no idea when that label was applied or why it was applied. And also usually it doesn't have any like any context. Next example there is I organized this conference called FemtoConf, and of course we have an email list. And when I first set it up, I was tagging people like with the years they attended and in what role they attended. So I would have a tag for FemtoConf 2018, FemtoConf 2019, and so on, and also tags for attendee and speaker. And like that was fine the first year, but the second year, I suddenly had people who were both a speaker and an attendee in FemtoConf 2018 and 2019, and I had no idea like what year were they a speaker and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, tags only get useful like once you add some context to them. For example, if you make it a more complex tag instead of just having like having a tag called speaker, have it speaker 2018 or something. But then if you think about it, those are just properties. You could as well have property on the user that's something like role 2018 equals speaker, role 2018 equals attendee, and so on. And yeah, with that, that's basically the answer. Just use properties and you get meaningful key value pairs that describe the thing you want to describe, basically.
Yeah, I was talking to someone about this last week as we were kind of reviewing the new onboarding sequence that we're building for Castos. And what this person pointed out is that the problem with tags, like you said, Benedict, is that they have no time value. So you can't say, you know, Bob published his first podcast episode on June 12th. You can only say Bob has published a podcast episode, and so you can't do anything with that. Like what we're looking at doing is to say like when a tag is, this is not the right way to do it, but since we already have tags set up, what we're going to do is say, create a, like a global rule is that when a tag is applied, also create a custom event that gives it a timestamp. So if someone is, if people out there are already stuck in tag world, you can also create custom events, which give it a timestamp. And then you can do things in automation world based on timestamps of those custom events.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So with user list, we basically don't have any tags at all. Like if you want, you can kind of fake it, but we don't encourage you to do it. Instead, we encourage people to just send like custom events as exactly for that reason, because then like you have the time information and also you have like account information. Like you can track that they created 5 new podcast episodes in the last week or something like that. Yeah. That's also not possible with tag. Once the tag is applied, then it's applied. You cannot like put 2 tags with the same value on the user.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about segments versus events, I guess. So I know in user list, you guys have the concept of segments. So people kind of in the same bucket and going down the same path. What is the kind of logic behind that? And how should people think about using segments in their onboarding automation?
So segments are a very powerful concept. And for some reason, in the minds of our users and a lot of people there, segments are just for structuring the user base to understand like who has many projects and who has one project and like who has onboarded and stuff. But in fact, segments are also a great way to trigger your automations, because typically when the user moves from a non-onboarded user to a basic user and then let's say to a proficient user, that also means that you can start sending them different educational sequences, not containing like 20 emails, but to start treating them differently in the automations. In user list, segments are essentially a way to capture a filter and apply it, and that's going to be updated dynamically. So let's say you consider that a basic user is someone who has between 5 to 10 projects, and that's like the slice of users that you consider basic. So when they join an advanced user cohort who has like more than 10 projects, let's say, you can start sending them different information. That's like very, very bare bones implementation of that. And you can also, in user list, you can also use event-based filters, which means you can count how many times somebody did something, and you can also use these kind of data to inform your segments as well. So it's a really powerful method, and it also helps you to set up segments in one place. And when you go to your automation platform, you just pick a segment in a dropdown and you're done. You don't have to double think about the conditions many times as you're triggering different campaigns.
So folks would think about segments as like groups of their list or like personas, right?
Right. And they're updated dynamically. So you don't assign them manually, but they're updated dynamically based on conditions.
So a segment is when someone becomes kind of a power user, or you would consider them onboarded, and you start sending them different content based on the fact that they've kind of achieved this status in your app, right?
Absolutely. It would be a good place now to say what kind of segments almost any SaaS could have. It's trialing users, people who are undergoing a trial right now. Then we have a special segment for trial ending soon, so we can go and explore these users and send them something else. Then it's newly onboarded users, basic users, and advanced users after they spend some time in your app or after they do a lot of things in your app.
One of the things that we went through when I was getting onboarded in UserList for SalesCamp is you guys helped kind of think through what the flow of a customer or a new user would be in the app and how to kind of use onboarding automation to make them successful. And I know you guys have both like worksheets that people can use to kind of self-serve their way through this and some like pre-made blueprints of like, you know, these are the things that Benedict and Jane think are the best way that you should think about doing this. You guys want to talk about the two of those things and how people might think about using them in their apps?
Yeah, so we have worksheets, which are our primary lead magnet on the site. So that's how we try to capture visitors. That's a set of printable worksheets that you can print out and try to figure out your automations and segments and properties before you even do anything inside the app. And essentially, you can use this just as a basis for a brainstorming session. And as for blueprints, that's a piece of content we've been working recently. We try to identify common patterns in SaaS businesses and translate that into the language of properties, segments, and events, which is so challenging for people. Because the challenging part is that every business is so unique that we all know this recipe for figuring out the aha moment and leading the user there, but What is that aha moment in your business? That is so challenging. Like discovering that is an aha moment in itself most times. You can discover that like 3 years after you're in the business because like, and then it reveals onto yourself and you're like, that's where they experience most trouble.
Yeah, this is a really interesting thing because, I mean, Jane knows that I've been badgering her over this new website design that we have for Castos, and we're trying to pull inspiration, is a very polite word, from a bunch of other best practices out there. So you look at really nice websites like Drift or MailPoet or whatever, and so I go to those websites and I say, I like what they do there. And then I go to another website and say, oh, I like what they do there. And then our website looks like this crazy hodgepodge of like the weird best parts of like a dozen different websites. And sometimes it just doesn't work right because it's not like a cohesive thought out thing. I'm not a designer and this is why it looks like crap, but, but I think this is like important to, like you're saying, like you go through onboarding of a bunch of SaaS apps that we all subscribe to and you say, oh, that's nice. And no, this is nice. Or why did you think about that? But it's dangerous too, right? Because they're in a different position, talking to a different audience about a different product than you are. How do you guys think about like taking the best of what's out there and implementing it in your or our businesses and like filtering out the parts that might make that process dangerous? You know what I mean?
We're trying to distill the most bulletproof patterns that are obviously beneficial. And generally speaking, your onboarding doesn't have to be revolutionary, complex, and have multiple components in it. Just think of a pattern that most matters the most. Like if you are an owner of a freemium product, you're going to have like one kind of a timeline and activity-based email. If you have a free trial, then you have different dynamics. So in the blueprints materials, we try to lay out these types of journeys, and maybe you can recognize your business among those and apply those recipes.
So this brings up an interesting point. I don't know if you guys have a strong opinion on this or not, but some of the feedback we've gotten recently is, why don't you try sign up without credit card? Because we're like a credit card to start your trial. And I know this probably changes a lot of how you onboard somebody, but for people that are doing credit card up front, considering going no credit card, and that they need to convert the customer later, how do you think about those two things and when each of them are right? This is not an onboarding question, but just kind of general SaaS question.
Yeah, we have a lot of opinions.
how do you do it at UserList?
For UserList, the decision, like we talked about, is a bunch, but in the end, the decision was pretty obvious to do like credit card upfront, mostly because we are sending emails and we basically want to detract spammers from just signing up and sending a bunch of emails and abusing our system and basically hurting legitimate users by messing with our deliverability and stuff. So it was an easy decision to decide credit card upfront is the way to go, just to filter out, like at least put some barrier in there before people can actually start sending emails.
And also signing up for UserList and setting up all the automation, setting up the integration is such a commitment that literally just entering credit card details, if that's already a problem, then it's very unlikely that they're going to go through other hurdles that we have for them.
Yeah.
So it's like the least, the smallest possible filter we can set there. Very unlikely that if they resist the credit card, that they're going to go and start channeling their data into our system. Well, that's very improbable.
Not to dig into the details of the business too much, but I know you guys face a challenge that we see or saw with Sales Camp a little bit of the app being one that people really need to invest some time to onboard themselves into. So it's not like signing up for MailChimp, where you sign up for MailChimp and you're a user and you start sending emails and all this kind of stuff, right? UserList, you have to integrate UserList into your website, probably a couple of different places, and map out the customer journey and all these custom events and all this kind of stuff. Similar to Sales Camp, we had integrations where you had to integrate this with Stripe and all this kind of stuff. And we found it to be a big barrier to people getting onboarded. How much of that are you guys seeing? And maybe like, what have you learned of like the stuff that you're good at, like of onboarding customers? What have you learned that has made onboarding people easier in probably what is a pretty difficult like onboarding process?
So I think by now we identified like three big problems that people have to overcome before they are actually properly onboarded. One is just having a product or a business that's in the right place where it actually makes sense to send like automated emails. So some people want to sign up, but then they realize, okay, I only have like 5 users. Probably not a good time investment to set up a huge complex automation system if I can just email them myself. And I feel like there's not much we can do about that part. And the other two parts is basically the split between technical and non-technical founders. Like the technical founders have an easy time just getting the data flowing, building the integration that usually takes them an hour or two. But then they struggle with setting up campaigns and writing emails and figuring out what to send and when to send. And then the other way around, the non-technical founders usually struggle with getting the data flowing, but then have an easy time setting up the email sequences.
Mm. And Benedict, are you guys integrated with Segment?
Yes, we recently launched our Segment integration, essentially to lower the barriers for non-technical people or even technical people, because then, of course, you still have to do the integration, like you have to integrate Segment. But once that's done, you can basically get somewhat cheap and easy access to a lot of tools. And we are continuously looking at basically improving those parts, like for one, like on the technical side, building integrations with Segment, and we're also looking at other platforms. And on the content side and setting up the campaigns, we recently integrated templates, like campaign templates, directly inside the app. So you can just like create a new campaign and then, I don't know, select the onboarding sequence template, and it will just pre-populate it. So you get a rough outline that you can work with instead of having to come up with everything on your own.
Yeah, there's nothing more intimidating than like a blank screen. That's
yes,
both from a UI perspective and like just from a customer just getting stomped at me, like, oh, fuck this. I can't possibly write 10 emails and figure out what the customer journey is and all that kind of stuff, right? It's
yeah, exactly. So in the end, I mean, those are the two major problems people are facing, and we're just figuring out ways to make those easier and making, yeah, reducing the barrier to entry. Like in the early days, we even like built integrations for people, like writing the code, as you probably remember.
I do. I mean, I think, no, and that's like, not to advertise it too much, but I really would think about like until you get to 50 customers or something like 100 customers, like could you offer this as like a free service with an annual plan or something? Like people sign up for an annual plan, you write the emails and define the customer journey for them. I can imagine a ton of people would sign up for that.
You'd be surprised.
You've asked?
We tried different variations of that. And what we discovered is that first, the most important thing is the right point in their business where they feel the need and the inspiration and the urge to invest resources into that, even if resources mean just like telling us to do that, because otherwise it's never on the top of their to-do list. And you could see very complex situations popping up, like very complex accounts being set up easily just because people are invested into that. And on the other hand, we tried suggesting onboarding. I personally wrote down like very complex like blueprints for their businesses, custom blueprints, and that didn't go anywhere because it wasn't the right time for their business. So it's more like a match of a lot of circumstances that helps them get on board. We have a huge Kanban board in our little like CRM setup of the potential leads, and we have a huge column of follow-up later when they launch, like in a few months, when they launch in a year. And we're just playing a big waiting game with so many people right now. And that's delightful because we hope they will come back.
What do you, as a side note, what do you use for that CRM? What tool do you guys use?
For now, it's an Asana board. So okay. We don't have anything complex.
As simple as it gets.
Yeah, no, simple is good. We use Notion for some of that kind of stuff. And it's just like, yeah, it's janky, but it works.
Maybe when we have a team of salespeople, we'll have something more robust. But
right. So this is really interesting. Like getting someone at the right point in their journey as a customer is something I've thought about some, but never. I don't know that we've like run into that problem, because like we get customers, I'll say at Castos, like who are just starting a podcast or are moving from another podcast provider or self-hosting their podcast or whatever. But are you guys seeing like mostly people coming to you who have not had like onboarding automation before, or are they moving from another tool typically?
Benedict?
So we get some people who are just basically starting out and have no automation whatsoever. And there's also some who usually want to get off other tools like Intercom because the startup plan just ran out, right? And
the honeymoon's over.
The monthly cost just skyrocketed. But so yeah, I think it's like 50-50 these days.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember we were on Intercom for the first year, and it was $50 for the whole shebang, and then it was going to be about $600 after our 1 year startup plan ran out, and I was like, oh my, oh my God, this is like just amazing. Yeah. So I mean, intercom is a good topic. So like from a personal reason, personal reasons for you guys as a group, so why build user list, when things like intercom and drift and drip and active campaign are, and even like Help Scout, maybe like with their chat thing, like why build it, and kind of where do you guys hope to sit in the market?
I would love to share our little story here. So when we got together in 2017, we've already been working with Benedict for a while on my previous SaaS product. And I was really amazed by the lack of proper tools for doing that, for what UserList does. So literally, intercom was, it felt like it was the only tool that could do what it did. So that was showing the user list, so basic user management, then sending automated behavior-based email and in-apps. Intercom was like the only product that did it, and it didn't do it very well. It was also pretty expensive. For my little list, was like $100 or something, and it was even more if you grow. So, and also as a UI designer, I really wasn't happy with how they solved different challenges. Of course, things have changed ever since, and they redesigned and launched new features. But really, there was place for a simpler, more focused alternative that would be, you know, bootstrapper friendly, not in terms of money, but in terms of a philosophy. Because we've seen a lot of, you know, people who use our product, they enjoy the simplicity, they enjoy our approach to things, as opposed to being like trying to do all things in the world. We are just focusing on a few and doing them well.
No, I really like it. I mean, I think there's, as the SaaS market is increasingly competitive and complex, I think people focusing, I don't like the term niching down, but focusing on a specific problem to solve and doing it better than everyone else is a real like opportunity for a competitive advantage, as opposed to trying to go to head to head with intercom or drift or drip even, or something like that. It's just impossible.
Absolutely. We've just undergone a repositioning here at UserList. So we kind of adjusted the way we talk about ourselves so that it resonates better with people in their mind. And we wrote a big blog post about it. We used April Dunford's method to position ourselves in the market. And we also were brave enough to call out Intercom by name. And not saying that we're better, but saying that we stand in between competitive alternative number one is doing it yourself, and the other end of the spectrum is buying an expensive tool like Intercom. So we stand right in the middle. We don't compete with either, but we offer another option for people, and that's where we're hoping to find our niche in the market.
Awesome. We'll definitely link to the blog post in the show notes for this episode. I'm about halfway through April's book right now, and it's one of those books where you read and you're like, oh, I gotta stop, you take notes. I put this on my calendar to do tomorrow. Yeah, because I mean, I think it's kind of like what we're talking about, is like trying to go head to head with these folks, these big companies, is impossible for us as bootstrappers. And or even if you get funding, but you're only 2 years into it, like we're with Castos, 2.5 years into it. I mean, they have hundreds of engineers. You will never, ever, ever do as much work as they can do, you know, in a week. So I think to not compete, like you're saying, Jane, is the only way to go, to say we are not like them. We are like us, and we are going to do this, this, and this, and that's it. And you can like it or not, and that's just kind of what you get. But yeah, the book is fantastic so far. Was the process of deciding to reposition the business like something that you wanted to do, or were you guys finding like kind of a difficulty getting traction with your previous positioning and decided we need to take a look at how we're doing this because maybe positioning will help us grow faster or better?
Definitely the second one. It was part of our overall finding the product market fit for us, because we're still an early stage product. So it was important to get into a place where everybody instantly grasps what we do. And Benedict will prove that we've been going to events and saying like what we do, and we couldn't get people instantly get it. And that's not a great thing to have. So we triggered that process of repositioning. That's what we call it.
Yeah.
I love it. I also feel like previously we didn't really, like, we had a rough idea what we want to do, but like over the last year or so, building the product, it got more clear what userless actually is and what we do. So it was kind of necessary to rethink the positioning on the website and stuff.
So you're kind of saying you have to get out there, release some kind of product first, get customer feedback, see what's working, what's not, and then go through the repositioning process, as opposed to maybe you can't figure it out first before you get to market?
Yeah. I think that's a good way to say it. I remember like in 2017 when we started, I mean, we had a rough idea, but just putting it into words and even coming up with the copy for the first website, it was super vague because we didn't really know, like, will it go into this direction? Will it go into that direction? And that only became clear after building it and getting the first customers in there and talking to a lot of people, doing a lot of demo calls, and basically experiencing where our positioning had problems, like what part was confusing to people and stuff. And so I think it was a good idea to just go back and think about this again and come up with something better.
Was it tough? Like, I know we are all like totally married to our businesses and we think about them and we're in them all the time. And so to hear people's feedback and to have to go back and reassess maybe what your business is or what it really does or who it's for might be difficult because you've already invested all this like time and money and effort in thing one, but then you realize it's got to be actually thing two. Was it tough for you guys to say like, okay, we're not this, we're that, and like really listening and like grokking what people are saying and then kind of pivoting based on that? Or was it easy to say, oh, okay, well, let's just go pick up and move our house over there?
It was literally very, very quick decision, because when we laid out all the things, so we did all the exercise that April recommends. We had a big spreadsheet with the features and the value and mapped out to different customer types. And the outcome was so obvious. Claire was like, yeah, we're a customer messaging tool. How could I not guess before? Like, and instantly we saw that people understood what we do. So without changing anything in the product, we got to better product market fit with just calling ourselves a different thing. So it was not hard, but it was interesting to see how the actual exercise made it clear what we should do. That was pretty magical.
So all the changes you made based on your positioning, the result of your positioning exercise, were in marketing and copy and positioning, and nothing about product or features that you're building?
It's a ton about features, but not mostly about those that we have, but mostly about those that we are going to build in future. Mm. So we clearly now know where to go and what to not to build. Like, we had, for example, had some inspiration about building different insights and analytics into user list. But now that we are a customer messaging tool, we're definitely not going to pursue that. We'll leave it to analytics tools. While we're going to head down the in-app messaging path with pure confidence that this is the right way to go. So this is really refreshing and relieving to have a strong direction.
That's great. And you're seeing like an uptick in signups and trial conversions and all that kind of stuff after the repositioning?
There is a definite increase in interest. However, we're still battling that battle of long Kanban board of people who are wanting to use it, but still not the right stage. So it's not like instant increase, but it feels great.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I know we were talking before we got started a little bit about you guys are getting ready to come out of like a really strong beta period and planning your big launch. This is pretty far off the topic of like onboarding automation, but I think everyone is interested about like how people are thinking about launching their apps. As much as you want to share or can share about what you have planned or what you think you'll do when you go to launch, to kind of make a splash, we'd love to hear it.
I'd love to hear it too. because It's literally on the agenda for our call later today. So far, we have made a decision to it's time to launch, but like how that will look like isn't very defined yet.
Okay, that's so fine.
I'm sorry, I can't share any wise insights or ideas there. Yeah,
I can share a bit why it's a good time to launch right now. Is because we've been quite stuck in the beta status for a while. Meanwhile, the product itself is in great shape. It's lacking a few technical details that, I don't know, password recovery and things like that. Not too many things like that, which Benedict is working to improve like right now. So once we fix little, tiny little things, we're absolutely in great shape to go out and start and instantly have a different status in the minds of people that we're now trustworthy, no more beta, like go ahead and let's do business together and things like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think a long beta period or a definite beta period is a really good thing for you to be able to feel comfortable about, okay, we're learning, our customers are learning with us and we're adapting really quickly. Now that you are to the point where you feel like your positioning is really good, the product is really good, you have the confidence to launch and say, okay, you know, self-service sign up, take your money, like let's get in here. I think that's great because you guys have to feel really confident in the work you've done up till now to be ready to go into like the launch phase and really start getting out there into the market. That's cool.
Yeah, thank you. We're so excited. We've learned a ton over the last year. We've done so many customer calls, like, and when we already felt like we're not learning anything particularly revolutionary new during the calls, that was the time when we felt confident to launch.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a good point that if you keep hearing different stuff or new stuff, you probably are still in the learning phase, but once you keep hearing the same thing over and over, then it's time to just go get customers. Yeah, I like it. Awesome. So Benedict and Jane, thanks so much for coming on. For folks who want to check out what you have going on with UserList, where is the best place to go to learn more?
It's definitely userlist.io. And we have all the resources that we talked about. The worksheets are available on every single page. So drop in your email and start brainstorming your stuff today. And we have a blog, which is full of different updates and instructions and blog posts. We have a knowledge base. So been really, really investing into making this an interesting place for you to spend your time before you get started with any kind of automation software.
Awesome. Benedict and Jane from UserList, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Craig. This was awesome.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.